What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Tomatolito Boxing Show, and the day of reckoning is just hovering just a few hours away. The day of reckoning is upon us, and this has to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, heavyweight card ever assembled, and one of the biggest promotions ever assembled in the history of professional boxing. Why do I say that? Am I just hyping it up? Maybe, but one of the things that really supports this is look at the promoters that are involved. Bob Arum with Top Rank, Eddie Hearn with Matchroom, his fame rivalry with none other than Bob Arum and Frank Warren, dating back to the rivalry with Eddie Hearn's father against Frank Warren when he was in the promoting business. Eddie Hearn, of course, took over Matchroom. So they're working together. Bob Arum, Eddie Hearn, Dimitri Salida. Nice Sauerland is going to be there with Wasserman Promotions. Ulf Steinforth with SES Sports. And Frank Warren with Queensberry. Top dogs in the promotion. The only ones missing right here would be Al Heyman with PBC and Golden Boy. They're the only ones that are not involved in this. They're the only ones not involved in this. Even Canelo has a hand in this by way of Matchroom, because Frank Sanchez is on the card. And Frank Sanchez has been fighting out of Canelo's training camp under the tutelage of Eddie Reynoso. And Eddie Reynoso is in-house, obviously. He's going to be cornering Frank Sanchez. And it's an event where we're going to break down every single one of the fights that have been announced that are going to be there. There is the light heavyweights that are going to be active. It's a light heavyweight matchup, championship match. There is a cruiserweight match, and then a ton of heavyweights that by the end of this event, the standings and the rankings are going to be shaken up and completely rearranged. With that said, we're also going to discuss as to who is not part of this card and the reasons why. Big names that are not part of this card. So let's get into it. And let's start in the order of weight divisions. So from smaller to largest, right? The smaller weight division, or do you guys want to start with maybe less entertaining or lesser known fights? Because they're all fairly good names. And by that sense, I would start with the cruiserweight, which is probably the lesser attractive of the divisions. But Let's do that. Let's start with the lesser of the opponents. So cruiserweights. Jairo Pitaya is bringing a big name. He's starting to build up a big name for himself. Jairo Pitaya fighting at cruiserweight. This is your only cruiserweight matchup of the entire card. This is why I say it's the lesser known of the card. He's going to be fighting Ellis Zorro. Ellis Zorro, of course, is 17-0. Jairo Pitaya is 23-0. And Jairo Pitaya is the next big sensation at cruiserweight. 23-0 with 18 knockouts, fighting out of Australia. He was last active against another undefeated fighter in Jordan Thompson, and that was in September of this year, just a few months back. Prior to that, he ended up getting the nod against none other than Maris Brades, and that was for the IBF title. That was in July of last year, last summer, 22. So this year, he's already been active once, and that was in September against Jordan Thompson. He was successful in that fight, stopped Thompson in the fourth round, and now he's going to fight Ellis Zorro. Ellis Zorro is a lesser-known, soft-spoken fighter, 17-0 with 7 knockouts to his name, fighting out of the UK, and he was last active in October, so a little more recent than Opetaia. But he's actually fought twice this year. In May, he fought Hosea Burton. And then in October, he fought Luca Di Ortensi. Both decent opponents. The best opposition that he's had to date. Dex Spellman was the best opponent that he had to date when he faced him, and that was in September of last year. And he's continuously been stepping up in his opposition. Hosea Burton was the toughest opponent when he faced him, and then Luca Diortensi, a tougher opponent than that of Hosea Burton and a higher ranked opponent. And he's doing it the right way. They're building him up and matchmaking him perfectly until tomorrow. I really think that this is a huge step up for him in fighting Jairo Pitaya. In that sense, maybe they're throwing him to the wolves, but also an opportunity of a lifetime. And what a stage to announce your arrival, your presence, than that of the Day of Reckoning in what is the biggest card, one of the biggest cards ever assembled. So he could potentially just skyrocket tomorrow. His stock could absolutely skyrocket with the victory handing Jairo Pitaya, who is a heavy favorite to win this fight and the heavy favorite to basically unify the cruiserweight division. If Zorro manages to get the nod over Pitaya, his career is going to take off faster, at a faster rate than it already is building up right now. If he stops Pitaya, he's going to be on everybody's radar. For Pitaya, this is just another day at the office. Solid opposition. He's been in there with some good, and at that, great level fighters, as in Maris Brady's. Great level fighters who are near the top of the division and have been at the top of the division. So for him is another day at the office with an undefeated up-and-coming fighter. Tough opposition. That's what he's used to facing, and he's been doing it for a lot longer. So that's going to be an interesting fight. The favorite to come out victorious is Jairo Pitaya. So we'll be looking. Obviously, we love the Rocky stories and the upsets and the spoiled plans. So that's the interest behind this fight, that Zorro could pull off an upset. Because he is undefeated, he's not as heavy-handed as Jairo Pitaya, but he does have 7 knockouts to his credit in his young career. So that's going to be the cruiserweight matchup. No major implications in as far as that matchup, any titles, anything like that. But it's definitely it's a huge step up for Zorro, and it's a great stay busy knocking on the door of unifying that division in for Jairo Pitaya. So great opportunity for both of them. From there, the next fight would be jump over, because we'll go in order of how I think the fights might happen. Arslan Makhmudov, the monster Makhmudov, he's going to be fighting Ajit Kabayel. Kabayel 23-0, Makhmudov 18-0. Of course, everybody tunes in to see Makhmudov's fights because he's an absolute giant and a monster and a super heavy hitter. He would be one that I would be super intrigued should he be successful tomorrow, which chances are that he is, and he's a heavy favorite by way of his heavy hands. It would be amazing to see him paired up against a Francis Ngannou, who had an amazing boxing debut and an amazing showing against none other than Tyson Fury this past summer. So Makhmudov and a Francis Ngannou future showdown would be basically two fighters hitting each other with bricks, with cinder blocks in each of their fists. 4 cinder blocks just waving around the ring if Ngannou and Makhmudov face off. Makhmudov, the monster, 17 knockouts to his 18 wins. The only fighter he wasn't able to beat was Carlos Takam. In a 10-round fight, went all the way to decision. Makhmudov got the nod. Ajit Kabayel is ranked beneath Makhmudov, but he's on the up and up, similar to who we just talked about in Ellis Zorro at cruiserweight. Kabayel is on the up and up, German fighter, highly ranked within the top. Some have him in the top 20, some have him in the top 30. he's coming off a victory at the beginning of the year or in the first quarter of the year in March. And that's that was against Agron Smakichi. That was a 19-1 fighter. That was definitely by far the best opposition he's had to date. Other than that, I mean, we're looking at Caballero, who's 23-0 with 15 knockouts. Not as heavy of a puncher as Makhmudov. He's going to have to get on his bicycle. He's going to have to fight this from the outside. He's going to have to fight this in the second half of the fight and stay active if he wants to have a chance at wearing Makhmudov and potentially getting the nod against him. The only way I see Caballero winning this fight is going to be by decision, by outpointing Makhmudov, by outboxing him, and getting away from him. If you get in close, Makhmudov will clinch, punch on the reset, and stop you. Lights out. So he's got to stay busy in the first half of the fight and active in the second half of the fight if he wants to win. Favorite to win here is Makhmudov. I'm favoring Makhmudov as well just because of his heavy hands, and he's bound to catch him. Makhmudov and a Deontay Wilder, should Deontay Wilder be successful, that's another big showdown. And Makhmudov is already starting to make enough noise because of his record and his quick ascension to the higher rankings of boxing of the heavyweight division, that he's just a couple fights away from fighting these big names. So that's going to be a 10-round fight for these two. Caballero's got his work cut out for him. He's shorter. He's not that much quicker than Makhmudov because he tends to sit on his punches when he delivers down the center of the ring. He's going to have to, hopefully, that's what he worked on. His bicycle, his footwork, and circling the ring to be able to build a chance against Makhmudov. He's going to have to be really, really smart and try to hit Makhmudov in his stamina. And of course, landing here and there. But if he's going to try to trade, he's going to have, unless he pulls off that shocking home run hit, he's going to have his work cut out for him and potentially a short night. We move on from there to Frank Sanchez and Junior Fa. In my opinion, this is the fighter in Frank Sanchez who could outshine everybody in the entire card, who could have the most successful and the biggest rise to their respective stock if he puts on a magnificent performance. He's a great boxer with good pedigree, with good punching power, great combinations. He's the NABO champ in the heavyweight division, and he's been getting brought up amazingly. He continuously steps up in competition on somewhat of a fast track, and has been slowly climbing on the radars, has climbed into the radars of everybody and anybody who's a name in the heavyweight division. Yet, he's been on Canelo's cards, several of them, but has not been part of a huge event. This should be his coming out party, and he will be known to everybody if he puts on a great performance against Junior Fa tomorrow. I think he's the one that could definitely benefit the absolute most out of all the heavyweights tomorrow. Yes, there's big names and there's big paydays looming there, and we're going to get into those as we climb up the card. But Frank Sanchez has been knocking on, and he's been slowly climbing into people's radars and knocking on the doors, calling out for big names, but he's not there yet. Yet he's good. He's really good. He's 23-0 with 16 knockouts. Traditional Cuban style, fast hands, solid footwork, great delivery, and possesses pop. He stopped Scott Alexander in September of this year on the undercard of the Canelo event against Charlo. And he fought in April of this year against Daniel Martz. Junior Fa is going to have height to his advantage, reach, and potentially punching power because he is the bigger body of the two. He's a heavy-handed fighter as well, but the delivery of Frank Sanchez is where I favor Frank Sanchez's power. It's the way he whips his punches versus Junior Fa having more of a traditional heavyweight where he's just a heavy-handed fighter that when he touches you, he shakes you. Frank Sanchez fights more like a smaller fighter, like a middleweight, a little bit quicker, so his delivery is more of a whipping attack. He trains with Canelo. He sparred with Canelo. His delivery is different than that of your traditional heavyweights and reminds me a lot of how Andy Ruiz looked against and how Andy Ruiz fights, but how Andy Ruiz looked against Anthony Joshua. That's kind of the Frank Sanchez fighter, and that fight with Andy Ruiz and Frank Sanchez would be absolute fireworks because they both possess that fast hand, fast delivery approach to the heavyweight division. Junior Fa is coming in with a 20-2 record, 11 knockouts to his favor. The two losses that he has, his first loss was at the hands of Joseph Parker, who is the co-main event of this card. And that was the big homecoming bragging right type fight. I believe I covered it here. You could check back the catalog, but I'm pretty sure I covered it. I know I watched it. And there was a lot of hype behind that because it was hosted in Auckland, and it was the Aussie versus New Zealander type fight for bragging rights, for who's going to be the big dog of that of back home. And it was just two giants just going at each other. It ended up going to all 12 rounds. Joseph Parker got the nod, got the decision win. But that was a fun fight to have witnessed. Towards the second part of the fight, the latter stages, the latter rounds, Joseph Parker dominated the latter rounds of that fight and got the scores to his favor. Then he lost to his very next fight. He fought Lucas Brown and was stopped in the first round. He set out from the Parker fight, which took place in February of 21. He did not return. He set out the entire rest of the 2021, returned in June, summer of 22, and was stopped in one round. Hands down, all signs point to that huge gap and level of inactivity is a bigger detriment, especially to the heavyweight fighters. They tend to get slower, and they tend to not show up. And we're going to talk about that because there are several fighters that have huge gaps, huge layoffs that they're stepping into the ring here with. That's going to be a fun fight, 20-2 against the undefeated Frank Sanchez. Absolute hell of a fight, and that's the sleeper. That's the one that I'm really going to be tuning. Obviously, all of them are going to be interesting fights, but the Frank Sanchez Junior Fa, to me, has the biggest implications because Junior Fa winning this, well, he continues his ascension in the heavyweight division. I don't see any huge things for him other than maybe getting another game opponent and potentially somebody else, another one of the winners, the victors of this very same card. Meaning potentially a huge giant showdown against him and Mahmoud, because I definitely see Mahmoud beating Agbayel. Or potentially even getting a step up against Herjavec, who's going to be also active in this card. But Frank Sanchez, with the 23-0 and the NABO title, which is a lesser known title, of course, but that NABO title is like your golden ticket into facing any of the other champions, similar to what the IBO is. You're basically right there, ready to challenge any of the top dogs in the division. I really think if he looks impressive and he stops Junior Fa, Frank Sanchez's stock is going to rise through the sky tomorrow. It's going to skyrocket, and he's going to be on everybody's radar. With an impressive win, he'll start becoming one of those notorious names in the heavyweight division. From there, we're going to move on to Filip Hrdjavic, who we were just mentioning. He's going to be fighting Mark Demory. Now, Hrdjavic is highly ranked. He should be in the top 10 of anybody's rankings in the heavyweight division, whereas Mark Demory is not as highly ranked as him. Mark Demory has a lot of experience. He's been fighting since 2004. So he's definitely on the latter stages of his career. He continues to stay active. 19-year veteran, going on 20 years as a veteran, as a professional. Mark Demory has an amazing record of 41-2-2. However, Mark Demory has a 41-2-2 record, and he is that type of second-tier gatekeeper type fighter where he continuously selects and fights lesser opposition, continues to outshine because he's a talented boxer when he faces low-tier and low-level tiered opposition. So he continues to outshine him and look good. And his record continues to look good. I'll tell you, I'll give you something to back that up. 41-2-2. His two draws, one came against Alex Lapai in Alex Lapai's debut. We know Alex Lapai. He currently sits with a 32-8 record out of Australia, and he recently lost. His last loss was against none other than Joseph Parker. That was a big showdown, Lapai against Parker. That fight took place in 2019. Lapai has not been active for the last 4 years. I don't know if he's retired, if he's officially retired. I may be behind on those news, but I do know that he's been inactive for 4 years now, so I'm going to assume that he's hung him up. That was his last big fight, and he was stopped in 10 rounds against Joseph Parker. So think about it. When Lapai debuted, that was Demory's sixth professional fight, and he had a majority draw against Lapai. Two fights later, he gets knocked out in the first round by a fighter by the name of John Wyborn. He goes on a three-fight knockout streak and then has his second draw of his career against Elisara Ciuta in a six-rounder. He continues his ascension and puts on a streak of knockouts. Impressive streak of knockouts, which got him into a huge showdown against and the biggest payday of his career against David Haye. That fight took place in 2016, and he was stopped by David Haye in the very first round. David Haye was stepping into the ring with a record of 26-2. When that fight took place in 2016, that was at the O2. David Haye was just dominating at that time. He bounces back and goes on another. This is Mark Demory still. Goes on another impressive knockout streak of 8 to 10 fights or so with some decisions in there. And that leads him into this fight with Filip Hrdjavic. So his losses at the hands of John Wyborn and David Haye, and then two draws. But let me give you the records of the last four opponents that he's faced, dating back to 2019, Laszlo Czene, 6 wins, 38 losses. Demory knocked him out in 2 rounds. 2021 was his next fight. He fights Laszlo Toth, a fighter with a 21-20 record. Demory knocks him out in 1 round. We move on to June of 22. A whole 14 months later. Satria Antasena had a record of 5 victories, 19 losses. Demory stops him in 2 rounds. He sits out the rest of the year. Came back earlier this year in September. 15-month layoff at that. He fights Michael Sigurlaki, who entered a ring with a 16-20-2 record, and Demory got the decision win against Sigurlaki. And now he steps in here against Filip Hrdzavik, who is coming into the ring with 16-0 and is just better in every way than Demory. Demory has the knowledge, has the experience, has the record, 3 times more fights than what Hrdzavik has. But Hrdzavik possesses a well-rounded, superb arsenal that I think is just going to be another similar result to what he suffered at the hands of David Haye, and maybe a 1 or 2 round knockout defeat for Mark Demory. He's an older fighter with a good record that's going to look good on Hrdzavik's resume. A 16-0 fighter beating a 41-2 fighter. Demory is on the latter stages of his career, few fights away from hanging him up. Hrdzavik is on his ascension, 16-0 with 13 knockouts to his name. The Croatian fought in August and knocked out Dempsey McKean in the very last round of the fight. He's got good names in his resume thus far. And the more notorious, the most notorious name is 2 fights ago, where many thought that the giant, Zilei Zeng, did enough to have deserved the victory against Hrdzavik. Yet Hrdzavik got the decision win over Zeng. That's always been a disputed fight, and we've been wanting that rematch to happen. And it may very well happen in 2024. Who's Zilei Zeng, if you haven't been keeping tabs? Zilei Zeng is the monster who stopped the juggernaut, Joe Joyce. Zilei Zeng's only loss in his record is that decision loss to Hrdzavik. His last 2 fights were against the juggernaut, Joe Joyce. Stopped them in April of this year. In 6 rounds, and gave Joe Joyce the first blemish of his impeccable career to date. And then they met in September, and he stops him again, this time in faster fashion. He stopped them in 6 in their first showing, and stops them in 3. So of 24 rounds scheduled between these two, it only took Zeng 9 rounds to stop him twice and give the 2 losses, the 2 blemishes to Joe Joyce's record. In nasty fashion, Zeng is a force to be reckoned with, and he, along with Joe Joyce, are 2 of the fighters that are not taking part in this big event of heavyweights. Why? Well, because they faced off against each other. They had a busy year. Joe Joyce was supposed to bounce back and look better in the rematch, and instead got stopped even quicker in the second go around against Zhang, rather than avenging that loss. Zhang is a force to be reckoned with in the heavyweights. And it would have been great if he would have been part of this card, but of course he was active. Joe Joyce, coming off of two losses, is going to sit out the rest of the year and probably won't be back until the spring, maybe the summer of 2024. He suffered back-to-back batterings and beatings to Zhang. Nasty headshot in the second one, eye damage in the first one. Big Bang Zhang and Joe Joyce are not part of this card. Herjavec, huge favorite to beat Mark DeMori. And we move on. From these guys, we start getting into the higher profile fights. Daniel Dubois and Gerald Big Baby Miller. Daniel Dubois, by many, including by myself, should have been crowned the champion earlier this year in August. That questionable body blow that he landed on Usyk, which set Usyk for what seemed like an hour, and he rolled around and put on a show and this and that, and oh, it was a low blow, and the circus that it became, Dubois checked out mentally, and by the time that the fight resumed, he was out of it. He felt that he was wronged, the corner was out of it, he was out of it, and he couldn't get back into the fight, and Usyk ends up stopping him several rounds later. He stops him in the ninth. Usyk retains his titles. He sells it to the public that he got hit with a low blow and this, illegal blow, blah, blah, blah. Frank Warren and Dubois, the team, were all disgusted in the ring, getting booed, getting heckled. They appealed this decision to no avail. It was shut down. Usyk remains as the champion. And Dubois is getting into this big showdown against Big Baby Gerald Miller. Now, Gerald Miller, if you remember, he was supposed to have his big coming out party. He's a kickboxer, Muay Thai kickboxer, Muay Thai fighter kickboxer, who was just climbing up the ranks of the heavyweight division in a fast-track manner and got himself into a fight against Anthony Joshua. That fight against Anthony Joshua was supposed to have been, what, 2019? Is that when the fight happened? Or when the fight was supposed to happen? I'll double check here for you. Yeah, that was the summer of 2019, June 2019. So, let's revisit that. Big Baby Miller. Big Baby Miller ...26-0. He has one draw in his record. And that came early in his career, approximately 10 years ago actually, 2013-ish. He comes in with a 26-0-1 record, 22 knockouts to his name of the 26 victories. He fought Lucas Brown and stopped him in 6 rounds earlier this year. So he's been active this year. Daniel Dubois, last fight was for all the belts. Many felt that he should have been crowned the champion. That new champion, unified champion, should have been crowned that night. Instead, Usyk ended up getting the hometown cooking, I guess. I hate to say it because Usyk is such an amazing fighter, but that was just odd. Anyways, he got back up. The fight resumed. He stops Dubois in round 9. Dubois bouncing back from that loss. He's coming in with a 19-2 record. Of course, the other loss was at the hands of Joe Joyce when Joe Joyce just demolished his eyeball. Destroyed his orbital bone. That was back in 2020. That's when the juggernaut was made a name for himself and became a household name and a who's who of the heavyweight division. Gerald Miller, if you recall, was supposed to be in that big summer showdown against Anthony Joshua. That was Anthony Joshua's introduction into the U.S. market. And the fight was going to be made in New York and blah, blah, blah. And they had a heated lead up to the fight and all this, all that, all the hype and the back and forths, the animosity, the drama. And then Big Baby Miller ends up failing a multitude of tests leading up to the fight, which eliminated him from the fight. All failed due to performance enhancing drugs. Enter Andy Ruiz as a last minute stand in, and he goes on to pull off the Rocky story, the shock to the heavyweight world, dethrones Anthony Joshua, stops him, and Andy Ruiz went from relatively unknown into everybody's headlines and TV shows and appearances and the traditional Rocky story. Quick rise to fame derailed Andy Ruiz because by the time the rematch happened with Anthony Joshua, he was even heavier than the first fight. And all the reports that he had not been training, he had been partying, he had been, anyways, a lesser prepared, unprepared, very unprofessional version of Andy Ruiz made it to the ring in Saudi Arabia in the rematch against Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua, of course, didn't want to exchange. No more stand and bang and no more ego trips for Anthony Joshua. He just fought from the outside and just basically made it a point pitter-patter type fight with Andy Ruiz and cruised to a decision win, got his titles back, and moved on to another day. But that's where Gerald Miller came in back then. He got back to boxing and is back to his winning ways, still undefeated. That's a super interesting fight against Daniel Dubois because Dubois is coming off of that controversial loss or the controversial fight against Alexander Usyk. No controversy related to the stoppage. He just didn't want to get up anymore. He got dropped. He didn't answer the count, walked to his ring and was disgusted with the whole thing. And as was Frank Warren and the entire team. So they wanted to dispute it to no avail. Alexander Usyk, there's a name that we just mentioned. We just talked about why Zhang and Joyce are not taking part in this big card. Why is Usyk the man at heavyweight division, or at least one of the two? Why is he not part of this card? Well, the other being Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King, who's also not part of this huge Day of Reckoning card. Why? Well, they're already scheduled to face off against one another and unify the heavyweight division, all titles on the line, lineal included, and that's going to be in February of 2024, a couple weeks away, not a couple weeks away, a couple months away. That's the reason why they're not part of this. Other than that, anybody who is a name in the heavyweight division is taking part in this. With the exceptions of one more fighter who I just mentioned, and that being Andy Ruiz, who basically, even though he denies it, he basically outpriced himself. And he was supposed to be in negotiations with a Deontay Wilder, also an Al Haymon promoted fighter, PBC fighter. That should have been an easy fight to make. But the negotiations, the back and forth, who deserves a 50-50 split, 60-40 split, who deserves this, who wants that, blah, blah, they never came to an agreement. And they wind and dined Deontay Wilder into taking part in this card. And his attention came to this, which is awesome because he's the co-main event here. And Andy Ruiz is sitting inactive once again. So he outpriced himself, and that tends to be a trend where people think they hold more value than what they do. And meanwhile, they continue to sit out, remain inactive. And when you continue to be outside of the spotlight and you got huge fights such as this taking place, well, people are noticing these fighters who are active and they begin pulling for these guys rather than the ones that are being forgotten about. And they're not being forgotten about because the public is at fault. They're being forgotten about because these fighters choose to be inactive and price themselves out of fights. They believe more in their own hype than they should. Versus what Anthony Joshua has been doing. That's why I commend Anthony Joshua so much, because he lost back-to-back fights and lost all his titles, his throne, everything to Alexander Usyk, and continued to bounce back. He just wants to stay busy and bounced around different camps and went to go train with Derek James and went to go train with Robert Garcia and even visited Eddie Reynoso. And he continued to stay active and continues to learn and be a student of the game. And look at him. Headlining another event, none other than Riyadh Season's Day of Reckoning. And he's going to be at the main event of this whole thing. Daniel Dubois, Gerald Miller, 50-50 fight for me. I don't know. That's a you pick 'em type of fight. I've already give you Philippe Herjavec, who's a favorite to beat Mark Demory. I'm giving you Frank Sanchez over Junior Fa. And I believe he will be the biggest winner of the night and of the entire card if he performs in magnificent fashion. I've given you Makhmudov to just dismantle and destroy Caballero. I'm giving you Opetaia in what should be a similar stay busy, easy fight for Opetaia to dismantle Zorro. The Rocky story lies with Zorro if he's able to pull off a huge upset and basically derail or rearrange the entire upper rankings of the cruiserweight division. Gerald Miller Dubois, 50-50 fight for me, and the upside is huge for both of them. Gerald Miller needs to win to get himself back into a fight with Anthony Joshua. That means Anthony Joshua, whether he wins or loses, he still has this big animosity built fight and the hype behind this Gerald Miller Anthony Joshua, because there's unvisited, untapped business due to Gerald Miller having failed all those drug tests when they were supposed to face each other 4 years ago. So that's still a big payday for Anthony Joshua, win or lose. Joshua's the name. Gerald Miller has to win this fight, which means it would be a huge wrench on the road of Daniel Dubois. Dubois, having performed the way he did with Usyk, is somewhat, slightly the favorite because he's been with better opposition than what Gerald Miller has faced. Gerald Miller has good names in his resume, but he hasn't faced and been across the ring from a Usyk, from a Joe Joyce. So Daniel Dubois has definitely knowledge and the ring generalship and the resume to favor him slightly, but I still see it as a 50-50 fight because power, I think Gerald Miller has it, but I think the more refined boxer is Daniel Dubois. I think he's got better footwork, better punch selection than Gerald Miller. Gerald Miller is just more of a stand and bang, flat-footed, huge haymaker type, Dillian White, Chisora style fighter. So that's an interesting one. I'm going to say 50-50. You pick him. You let me know how you see that fight. We move on to the light heavyweight. Go down two divisions to the light heavyweights. Dimitri Bivol and Lyndon Arthur. The sky is the limit for Lyndon Arthur, who's an up-and-coming young champion. He is the IBO champion. The IBO being the lesser of the sanctioning bodies, the lesser known, similar to that of the NABO. But the IBO title has been worn and been around the waist of numerous fighters of note. Anthony Joshua, dating back to Roy Jones Jr., Triple G, Mayweather, Pacquiao, Tyson Fury. So numerous fighters of note, and many that I'm not mentioning, but those are just some names to give you an idea of who has held the IBO title. And the meaningfulness, even though it's not one of the four major sanctioning bodies. Of course, WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO, and the Ring. Those are the ones that are the main four sanctioning bodies, and what's bringing attraction to boxing right now with this new era that we're in, the four belt era, which is about 20 years old, 21 years old. This four belt era that seems that's giving us and has crowned, we've witnessed the crowning of numerous undisputed champions, 10 to date. Here we go. There's a fight in a few days' time for another undisputed champion at 122, which is between Marlon Tapales and Naoya Inoue. So we'll be covering that as well. In February, we just talked about it. One that affects this division, which is going to be the heavyweight division, which is Tyson Fury, Oleksandr Usyk. All titles on the line. That could be number 11. Dimitri Bivol, Lyndon Arthur. Arthur's bringing the IBO title to the line. Dimitri Bivol bringing his WBA title that he has a stranglehold over. This is an interesting fight. Lyndon Arthur, who's the IBO champ, comes in with a 23-1 record, 16 knockouts, and was last active in September of this year. Prior to that, he was active in March of this year. Fought Boris Krejton and fought Brian Suarez. Bivol has not fought since last year. He's been off for 13 months since he faced Zurdo Ramirez. Nonetheless, all interviews, Bivol has said that he needed this rest, that he's utilized it and it's come in handy and he's reset, re-engaged, and ready to go. That's going to be the interesting one because, yes, the heavy favorite is that Dimitri Bivol will beat Lyndon Arthur. This is somewhat of a matchmaking headache or a matchmaking hell scenario for Lyndon Arthur because he's on the up and up of his career with an IBO title. He's wanting to get into these big fights. I feel that this is too soon, too fast for him. He needed a couple more fights with some bigger names before getting the top dog in the division, or one of the two, the other being Beterbiev, who holds three of the four titles. Bivol has one. Now, the sky's the limit, because if Lyndon Arthur pulls the shock, he's the more active fighter. He's been in multiple camps already this year and has been successful thus far this year, 2-0 in 2023, versus a fighter who is a champion but has a 13-month layoff that he's stepping into the ring with. Lyndon Arthur has to jump on him quick, has to let those hands go, and try to catch Bivol off guard and take advantage of any bit of ring rust that may be present. Because once Bivol gets set in his rhythm and his pace, there's going to be hell to pay for Lyndon Arthur, and this could potentially derail his career if it's a nasty stoppage at the hands of Bivol, which is what everybody's anticipating. It could potentially derail his entire career. So the upside is huge if Lyndon Arthur comes out successful, even if it's a decision win, but the downside could be very, very bad if he loses. If he loses by decision, his stock rises because he withstood and handled everything that Bivol would have thrown at him on this fight. But if he gets knocked out, which is the expectation that he gets stopped, this could be a huge detriment to his young career and the ascension within the light heavyweight division. Both titles on the line, Bivol could be an IBO champ, obviously. No major meaning there because Beterbiev is going to be defending his three titles of the major sanctioning bodies against none other than Callum Smith. That fight, of course, has huge standings because Callum Smith, who relinquished his titles as super middleweight to none other than Canelo Alvarez, moved up after that fight, after that loss. And if he's successful against Beterbiev, then he's going to be looking to unify against Bivol. If Lyndon Arthur pulls off the shocker against Bivol and lifts that title, well, his stock's going to shoot up, but rather he won't be in line to get let's just say Callum beats Better BF in a couple months' time and Beevil loses to Lyndon Arthur. Now we have two new champions. The unification belt won't happen between Arthur and Smith. You would have a Smith clamoring for an even bigger payday than what he received against Canelo Alvarez and giving Canelo the shot. And Canelo, you know for sure they would be shooting to try to make that fight against an opponent that he previously beat at super middleweight. And that would be the route for Canelo to get his hands and his hands around the light heavyweight titles that he's been wanting for so long. Even then, if Callum Smith doesn't go for it, which I don't know why he wouldn't, Canelo would probably go against Lyndon Arthur and get his hands around that WBA title that he fell short in his attempt against for that title against Dmitry Bivol. So that would be really interesting in that scenario, how that could easily play out. We move on to the co-main event and the main event. Deontay Wilder, Joseph Parker. Deontay Wilder has not been active since he defeated Helenius last year. Again, another fighter with a huge layoff, while Joseph Parker has been active three times this year. This is going to be his fourth fight this year. Now, Joseph Parker has not improved to new heights, new levels. He's very consistent. He has perfected his style. He's a good boxer with decent footwork, good delivery, good power. He's consistent. He's your blue-collar fighter that's going to get in there and give anybody a hell of a fight and the absolute best of him. He doesn't look worse. He doesn't look better. He's just very consistent and a tough test for anybody. And it's going to be tough for Deontay Wilder. Wilder, of course, came out of a long layoff since his last defeat at the hands of Tyson Fury. Those are the only losses he has in his record. The draw and two losses are against Tyson Fury. Those are all the blemishes he has in his record. Other than that, he's a wrecking machine. So for the people that are saying that Joseph Parker possesses too much good boxing and his boxing is going to be the key to victory against Deontay Wilder, don't forget that Deontay Wilder has defeated and beat solid boxers with high pedigree in King Kong Ortiz, who was supposed to be the toughest test and was supposed to be the one to stop and derail Deontay Wilder. Didn't happen. He gave a hell of a fight, all three fights, to the Gypsy King, who was supposed to just pick him apart and outbox him. Well, it turned out. It turned out in that way. But Fury's just a different beast. Dominic Brazil, solid boxer, very similar to what Joseph Parker possesses. Luis Ortiz. I mean, he's faced fighters similar to what Joseph, to that possess the threat level that Joseph Parker's bringing to the table, in my opinion. So I see Deontay Wilder, if he's been able to surpass those tests and deal with good boxers in the past, he's got concussive power in his hands. And that power has bailed him out numerous times throughout his career and had him at the top of the division lined up to face Anthony Joshua in a fight that never got made, when that should have been the undisputed showdown between Joshua and Wilder. They took too long. Negotiations never happened. They continued in their own ascension. Wilder took the harder route of the two by facing the Gypsy King, which is another fight that never got made with Joshua and Tyson Fury, which would have been a huge sellout to UK side. Wilder, in my opinion, took the harder of the routes. Joshua made decisions that backfired. Andy Ruiz. So Wilder has dealt with this style of boxer and fighter. I see Wilder's power again, bailing him out and landing. Joseph Parker does get hit a lot. He possesses good power and good delivery in his punches. He's accurate when he's when he's coming forward, but he tends to fight on his back foot a lot, and he's not very accurate countering. He's very sloppy when he counters. And if he gets caught while he's countering, or while he's fighting on the back foot, it's going to be night-night. And Deontay Wilder pulls off another amazing knockout victory. I don't see Deontay Wilder beating Joseph Parker by decision because Joseph Parker is a true and tried boxer. Joseph Parker wins this by decision. Deontay Wilder wins this by knockout. That's the only two paths of victory for each one of these fighters. And it's hard to pick. I've learned my lesson following Deontay Wilder's entire career. I've learned my lesson, and there's no way you're going to pick against Deontay Wilder's power. Don't be a dummy. I've been proven wrong time and time again. This is not the hope of me getting that Wilder-Anthony Joshua big showdown because we're all clamoring to see it. I'm just picking this fight as I see it, and I feel that Deontay Wilder's power, even though he's coming off a huge layoff versus Joseph Parker being so super consistent this year and active, this being his fourth fight of the year, I still feel that I haven't seen enough from Joseph Parker, enough improvement. I just see a lot of consistency in him, which is a huge positive. I think Deontay Wilder's power is going to bail him out again and keep him on the win streak or start building on his win streak that he started with Helenius. We move on to the main event, Anthony Joshua, Otto Wallin. We look at Anthony Joshua and Otto Wallin, and that's going to be a super interesting fight because I'm actually picking Otto Wallin to pull off the upset against Anthony Joshua. I don't see it as much of an upset because I'm looking at the styles, and Otto Wallin is a very good boxer, high pedigree. What I like about him, he's a level up from a Joseph Parker type boxer. I like about Otto Wallin that he doesn't abandon his style. He is one of those few fighters that sticks to the game plan and sticks by what's brought him so much success to date. He doesn't abandon it. He doesn't panic. He doesn't just start trading with his opponents and doing the stand and bang thing and the ego. He's very consistent, very accurate, good footwork, good hand speed, and good power. And if there's one fight that I could direct you to go watch before this event takes place, go watch his showing against none other than Tyson Fury, where he had Tyson Fury frustrated and busted up and was outpointing him throughout the fight. It was a hell of a showing between the two. And a fight where I recall Otto Wallin's face and his facial expressions when they were rendering the scorecards at the conclusion of the fight. And he was just besides himself, where he's like, what else do I need to do to have gotten a win here today? Other than have stopped Tyson Fury. Because he threw everything at him. So go watch that fight before the Anthony Joshua fight happens. And you'll see what I'm talking about. He doesn't abandon his style. He's very loyal to what's given him success to date. And I think I pick a 60-40 fight because Anthony Joshua and his two defeats. Yes, Anthony Joshua is back to his winning ways. He's got back-to-back wins against Jermaine Franklin in April of this year and against Robert Helenius, Wilder's former opponent, last opponent. But in his back-to-back defeats against Oleksandr Usyk, we did not see any adjustments. We didn't see a different Joshua. We were all interested to see if he was going to be a different version of himself and pull off a different game plan than what he pulled, similar to what he did against Andy Ruiz. He switched up the game board, switched up the approach, and got his titles back. We expected that. But he showed up as the same Anthony Joshua with the same, basically picked up where the fight left off in the first go. And it wasn't enough to get his titles back, and lost the decision, got outpointed, got outsmarted, got outpunched, got outworked by Oleksandr Usyk. And outsmarted is the key. And the key is Oleksandr Usyk lines up his lead foot with Joshua's lead foot and any of his taller opponents for that matter, which I anticipate he's going to do against Tyson Fury. And that's a strategy that Papachenko has perfected and would have Lomachenko implement against any taller fighter. Lomachenko has succeeded with that game plan, except when he faces fighters with fast footwork. Devin Haney, Teofimo Lopez. When he faced Jermaine Ortiz, he was struggling with them, and he decided to change it up a little bit and start banging it out with Ortiz, and eventually did enough to beat him down the stretch. But he was having trouble with fast-footed Jermaine Ortiz. But he couldn't implement that plan with Teo, and he couldn't implement the plan with Haney. Because they have fast footwork, and they're in and out and circling, similar to what Lomachenko's doing, so the plan doesn't work. But when he fights flat-footed fighters, especially taller fighters, they line up directly with their lead foot and circle around the extended arm. Whether it's on the inside and they catch the openings and generate the openings to the body or the face, or circling on the outside of the extended arm and catch them to the body or hooks to the face, which often generate the knockout and create the knockout or knockdown. Oleksandr Usyk applied the same game plan that Lomachenko had used in numerous fights leading up to his fight with Joshua in the first go around, and he implemented the same game plan and the same approach against Joshua in the rematch, and it worked. It worked flawlessly, and Joshua had nothing for him. The team and Joshua did not adapt and implement a new game plan, a new strategy. They instead approached it similar. Even though they said they had changed things around and it was going to be a new version, we ended up seeing a similar fight and a similar showing, which was not enough to get his titles back. This is a really good fighter in Otto Wallin, who is a really good boxer. Footwork is on his side, hand speed is on his side, punch selection is on his side, accuracy is on his side, and he possesses good power. The height, the reach, and the power slightly goes to Joshua, favors Joshua over Wallin, but the height and the reach are going to be the key. Wallin is not going to make this a dance. He's going to want to meet Joshua in the center of the ring, and that's where he's going to be able to outbox him. Joshua's going to be landing, but he's not going to land at will. And when Joshua goes on the back foot, because that's how Otto Wallin fights, go back and watch his fights. He inches forward into the opposition's territory until he invades their territory, and that's where he lets his hands go. And he's good. He's accurate. I have a 60-40 split, 60-40 favoring Otto Wallin to pull off the upset in the main event against Anthony Joshua and potentially derailing the fight between Joshua and Deontay Wilder, hence generating a potential Joshua-Gerald Miller revisited fight if Gerald Miller defeats Daniel Dubois. So that's it, my people. An hour-long episode, but it deserves every single second and minute of this. Over an hour that we're putting today for the Day of Reckoning, and I cannot wait to talk to you all in the recap episode and see how this all plays out. Huge card out in Riyadh. Riyadh season, Saudi Arabia. Huge card, and look at all the promoters that are on hand and the big names that we got. By the time this card ends, all the rankings and standings are going to be shaken up and realigned and rearranged, and we're going to have all new fights to look forward to come 2024. I'll see you guys all. Have yourselves an amazing night. Stay safe, stay healthy in what is this this beginning to a huge holiday weekend, Christmas weekend, and a huge holiday season that is upon us. So stay safe, stay healthy, stay surrounded by loved ones, and I wish you all the best and a very Merry Christmas. In the case that I don't get to the recap episode before the holidays, I should, but if I don't, I wish you a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and the very best of blessings from me to you in this holiday season. Take care of yourselves. Have yourselves a good night. I'm Hekali, and this is the Tomatolito Boxing Show.